So when Chris invited me to come to teach a weekend, or for some of you it might be just a day or a couple of days in London, the theme was, well, what's a relevant theme or a relevant garnish to put on the same old pizza? Because it always comes down to very mainstream practices, but a particular angle seemed obvious was living in the urban wilderness, urban jungle. Yeah. And the particular features, I would suggest, of urban life, which are just intensifications of human life in general. You know, cities are really just like lots of human beings. So it's just an intensification of common tendencies that we have as human beings and common experiences we have as sentient creatures. So it does tap into to very fundamental areas that we deal with in meditation or in insight or in inquiry or in calming, the various skills of what we call Buddhist meditation. So one of the features I think you'll all recognize is just the amount of impact there is coming through the eyes, ears, nose, coming in. You know, what you get, so much stuff is just pouring in through the sense doors, and every one of those sets up some kind of ripple or resonance in your mind or in your heart. It excites, it interests, it disappoints, it frightens. Yeah. So this is called contact. Contact just doesn't mean just purely the striking of a sense door, like seeing something. It really refers to that inner resonance in your mind. When you're interested, you look back, you linger, you're agitated, you're comforted, you're attracted somewhere or another. So that's contact. And with that, every time that happens, your mind is set trembling. Yeah? Every time that happens, your mind is set trembling, resonating. This can mean that and every time that happens, a little bit of energy is used up. So we find that the mind is pretty much set, stirred, stimulated a lot of the time, and at the end of the day we feel quite exhausted by it all. You haven't really done anything apart from, you know, ride on a tube train. And yet that's because the amount of sense impact that happens, contact impressions, is strong, and also the resonances of one experience don't die away before five other experiences jump in. So you haven't really processed, you know, one advertisement or one set of commands or one set of things you have to do before the next one comes in. The sense of the mind never actually discharges, never comes out of this resonating, trembling state, never comes back to a norm of quiet. It just goes from one to another, to another, to another. So there's this kind of, you might say, a feedback loop of almost like white noise, where the amount of input is actually far greater than the capacity to process it, yeah, to discharge it, to resolve it, to integrate it. The result of that is that the mind is left without a firm ground. Yeah. There's no sense of, this is what it's like when nothing's happening. You know, we never come back to zero, to the beginning, but to the fundamental mind. We're just actually swinging through the trees of the jungle. You know, various things kind of coming and going. Some of them pleasant, some of them unpleasant, some of them, you know, whatever nuances they carry. And so a lot of these nuances are about acquisition, buy one of these, have one of these, get one of those. Some of them are about fear, beware of this, beware of that, beware of the other. Some of them about aversion, you know, those things that we find irritating or agitating somewhere or another. So you get these three main messages. So your mind is actually swinging between things that could be and would be and wouldn't it be nice to have, to things that we've got to be on guard against, the things we feel disappointed or depressed by. Yeah. So, and then there isn't actually a neutral piece of ground to stand on. In fact, that bit seems almost like, what's that, you know? Is there such a thing? We lose contact with that. This is happening for everyone a lot of the time, but I think in urban life it's intensified by the speed of impact and the amount of it. So that the ability to process one piece of information, one set of instructions, one amount of events can't keep up with the fresh input that's coming in. So the mind is left kind of giddy and without a firm foundation. This means, in fact, that we lose the capacity to really, or our capacity to really respond is diminished. You know, we tend to ricochet. You bounce off of things. And also you start to cut out or the processing capacity because you don't have time to do it. So it's just basically reactions. You know, lights, flash, push button, go here, go there, duck, weave, jump through the doors, get on the thing, get off the other end, just put the card here, put the card there, watch that, jump there. So it's more like you're gerbiling all day, actually. new verb to gerbil. This is contact. Now when we come to meditation, one of the fundamental things is to establish a kind of contact that you can stay with. It doesn't keep shifting, so you can begin to process it and find out, what's this doing to me? Is this worthwhile pursuing? Is this interesting? How am I with that? You know, so you can inquire and you can deepen your learning because you sustain contact around something that isn't really saturated with greed, hatred or delusion. It's just kind of neutral, like breathing in and out, or the sensations in your body. You know? You can use that. And when you get that ability to process, you can actually be with something, feel how it affects you, learn how to moderate it, learn how to come back to a still point of balance. Then you can start to process some of the thoughts, the emotions that are, you know, generated by life, you know, by being in life. So you begin to sift through and process this backlog of stuff, of reverberations. Some of it you begin to recognize, oh, I'll just forget it, doesn't matter. But you can come back to fundamental, you know, a few fundamental patterns that are left in your mind. You know, one might be the need to have something, a fundamental pattern that every advertisement, no matter what it's selling you, it's, you know, iPods or cars or whatever it is, the basic message is you need to have something new. You know, so this need to have, which can be anything, you know, is a fundamental program or drive. So you need to have, why? What good will it do me? You begin to look at that and look at that instinct to have. The need to defend, ward off, security, insurance, the whole thing, you know, which is about human society. How much do you need to defend? How much do you need to, and how much can you defend? Since we're all on a sinking ship, if you like, we're all bound to the graveyard. To have, to own, to acquire, and these sort of fundamental instincts. And need to be somebody. Which again, if you're living in a human society, you need to be somebody. You need to have a shop window. You know, you need to have a personality, something that arises. And there can be a huge amount of anxiety around having an acceptable one, a good enough one, a really interesting one, you know, that different, or that's attractive, or that's agreeable with other people. So we have a lot of this personality stuff going on for us. This makes life rather busy and fraught. And you start to, so when we meditate, we the fundamental thing is coming to a place which isn't about personality, isn't about particular kinds of acquisition, contact. It's a place that feels clear and you can feel it, you can sense it yourself. And the rest of these things can then fall in line behind it. Obviously we always need to have some kind of, we're going to be somebody, but it's no longer has to be such a big issue. You don't have to get caught up in praise and blame for the rest of your life. Have a refuge. So contact is a big issue, and the things that arise out of that. Another fundamental faculty of the mind is the faculty called attention, which means the mind's ability to create a focus. We have something called attention, the mind's ability to create and sustain a focus, which could mean what I'm talking about, you can be with that. You can hear the sounds, you can stay with that. Yeah? Could be watching your television, you're with that. You find in urban life your attention span, the time which you can stay with something is rather limited because the next thing happens. So your attention span tends to be like 5 seconds, 3 seconds, jump, 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 jump. So your attention jumps and it's caught. A lot of attention in urban life isn't really decided, it's seized. That is, your eye is grabbed by this, your ear is grabbed by that, your mind is grabbed by this. So you get the sense in which your attention is always drawn out, and it's no longer your attention. It's a channel that all these external things use up. So again, when it's like that. Then when you come to meditate and you want to actually establish a place of contact, saying, well, all you have to do now is sit here and breathe in and breathe out, your attention is so used to being thrown around by everything else that you can't steer it. It's difficult to steer it. It's only used to sustaining itself for 5 seconds. So you say, okay, be with your breathing for half an hour, and it isn't going to happen. What happens is your attention gets grabbed by the things that annoyed you today, or things that you should do by tomorrow, or the things that you could have if you did this, or the things, really interesting thing that somebody else did somewhere else. You know, so your attention is still in that being grabbed mode. So this means the fact that your mind is not your own. You can't steer it, you know, it's difficult to steer it. And it always seems to be full of other business apart from looking after yourself. So attention is a topic. And in meditation, of course, we do start to train and exercise. It is an exercise like everything else, like doing physical workouts. You really can't expect that much at first, but you start with 3 seconds and you get to 5 seconds of attention span after a year or two. You know, you just got to work with it. Yeah. Attention. The other topic that's always way the human mind operates is intention, which is what we aim towards, what we motivate towards, what our intention is. And sometimes, you know, we can say, I intend compassion, or I intend kindness, or I intend, you know, you've got some kind of basic aim, you know, fundamental aiming in what we're doing. To be helpful, to earn a living, to look after ourselves, to help other people, intentions. Again, so it's, if you like, the what I'm doing, you know, why I do things. You know, and this again gets captured because of the various options you have in human life. That you could have this or you could do that. But again, you could go there. On the other hand, you could go there, or you could do this or learn that or become one of those. But then again, it might be better to do this and do something, you know. So you've got this huge option overload, which comes down to, you know, anything like trying to buy a cup of coffee. So, you know, I'm hardly in touch with this anymore, but I've been astonished sometimes somebody takes me to a Starbucks and says, you know, would I get a cup of coffee. Do you want a medium, big or small? Medium sounds safe. Medium. What do you want? Colombian, Kenyan? I'm already out of my depth. Do you want medium, roast, dark roast? Medium? Right, then you want it black? Black? Sugar? Or Demerara cane refined? I think I'll just have some water, please. Wait, fizzy water or steam? Actually, I'm not that thirsty. But you've got to, because you've got to find the one that's really going to work for you now. You're happy and fulfilled, and it's just a delight, and cheap, and, you know, we don't want you to go without getting your needs met. You see, so in this level, you see your intention gets kind of captured, mostly towards things to have and to make you feel happy. Yeah. Those things we can learn, you know, many, many possibilities. We can learn Tai Chi, classical guitar, word processing, Bengali, whatever, you know. So all these, you know, so you have this vast array of possibilities, and then there are the kind of the ways that you're instructed in terms of getting around, you know, traffic lights, signs, no entry, go here, go there, this is for men, this is for women, you know, and so after a while your intention capacity becomes sort of numbed. It's like the state I get to after the fifth round of questions in a coffee bar. I think, I don't care anymore. So that ability to really make a sense of this is really what I want to do. This is good. This is long term, you know, long term thing to aim for. Well, surely when we're living our lives, we want to find something that's about how do I really want to spend this time. Yeah. I'm a human being, capacities, what I want to really do that's useful. Instead, your mind gets saturated with what kind of sugar do you want to put in your coffee, things at that level, which are not really an issue, but your term of sense of long-term aim gets reduced to short-term hits. You know? Short-term hits. So your intention capacity doesn't get generated. Now, when we meditation, you intend things like kindness, you know, and you begin to recognize the ability to sustain an intention that's long-term, life-enhancing, not just for me, but for me and for you, both of us. This is where I start to feel really the most long-term happiness. Even if I don't get Demerara sugar in my coffee, I still feel okay. Yeah? So, you know, we develop qualities like that. Strong intentions. Intentions for patience. Intentions for forgiveness. Intentions just to be fully attentive. You know, just to be fully present. So, you develop those. And these help tremendously cultivating skillful contact, developing attention, and fostering skillful intentions help tremendously in getting you out of the jungle, because you come out of that tremendous deluge which is promising short-term gains, which takes away your authority over where your mind goes and gives you back to yourself. You know, it takes you out of that stuff and it says, you know, you have your life. Yeah. And it's not just hooked up to all this stuff, which isn't really about doing you that much good. It's about buying and selling. It's about law and order, these have some benefits, but also as individuals we want to look at something that's going to take us through life, you know, wherever we are, wherever we go, really long-term values and strengths, which is what we do in why this is, all this is the area of meditation, strengthening, developing, and also learning to let go of things that are just unnecessary, superfluous, weighty, burdensome, tangle. So now in terms of specific practices, we have one of the fundamental practices is embodiment. Partly, and it's so useful because once you come into your own bodily presence, you know, you have that contact wherever you go. Wherever you go, you're in contact with something that's got its own rhythm, its own substantiality, its own pace. You know, it's not electric, and it's grounding. And there's a particular rhythm in the body that's considered especially helpful for grounding and for healing and for steadying, is the rhythm of breathing. So this is not new, I'm sure. Yeah. So embodiment, coming into the body, feeling the body, making a sustaining contact there. Something that goes along with this is the developing attention, not just in terms of time duration, but of learning how to widen your focus to include your whole body, to narrow your focus to come down to particular points, so you get your attention becomes much more flexible. Third quality that we can accomplish in meditation is sustaining and clarifying intention, which you do is necessary. So, and we can do this not just towards others. I mean, the basic intention that we keep remembering is the intention that may others be well. If other people are well, they're going to be and contented and happy, they're going to cause me less problems. And may I be well, the both, not to ignore one over the other. So what is the kind of qualities that will sustain contentment for all of us? Non-violence, non-greed, non-blaming, non-abuse. Then if we like that, then it's something that can relax, feel less defensive, less agitated, more friendly. So this very fundamental intention, which we sustain or develop, check out. And part of that we do in meditation, particularly is just the way we relate to what we experience internally, our apparent self, you might say, where you can, which can be pretty untidy. You sit still, your mind gets all this untidiness, which is comes from the deluge. You can feel fed up with, impatient with, disappointed by. Why don't you ever get it together? This kind of self-criticism. So, one of the most profound and far-reaching practices is the sense of bearing presence with oneself, with a quality imbued with goodwill. It's hardly a romance. So you've got to kind of use a word like loving kindness, very flexy word. It's like a 40-year-old marriage, we've learned to not expect too much and not get disappointed, but not resignation. The beauty of it that can be missed is a sense this isn't just kind of a limp acceptance, but a sense of real keeping that sense of interest and goodwill. Now these are, all these practices are associated with the two forms of, two wings of meditation: calming, steadying, healing, soothing, creating a place where we feel a little more comfortable, and insight, which is looking into the places where we feel uncomfortable. What's causing that? What really causes that? Yeah. And looking to the places where we feel comfortable. What really causes that? Because with these qualities of feeling, mostly, particularly when you're very busy, you don't look into what causes the feeling or what it's based upon. You just get the feeling. And it's unpleasant, you just get away from it. Yeah. Or switch it off, or put something else on top of it. It's pleasant, get hold of it for as long as it lasts, and then, oh well, try and get another one. Yeah. But with insight, you calm the mind to the point where you can actually stay with pleasure and displeasure, agitation, disappointment, excitement, and to the point where you actually, that's interesting. Yes, what's this based upon? Where's this happening? You know, what are the, what's the, because this is internally produced. You know. Nothing by itself is pleasant or unpleasant. Something in us defines it as such. Nothing in itself is pleasant or unpleasant. You know, you get a piece of food, somebody says, yuck. Other person, this is my favourite. You know, music, wonderful, or a terrible row. Something, nothing to do with the sound itself, something in us makes things pleasant and unpleasant. Same piece of music, 2 o'clock in the morning it's terrible, 10 o'clock in the morning it's wonderful. Obvious, isn't it? 3 o'clock in the morning is a late night moth. But depending on really where, what your interests are, what your angles are, what your biases are, what your conditioning is, that's what makes it pleasant or unpleasant. Now, we have a possibility to change that. We have a possibility to step back from that and come out of those, because those judgments get locked. So this is insight, the ability to really transform your life, so that things don't catch you, things don't throw you into aversion or greed. It can be, you know, you have more say over it. So that's a, but we'll look at some of these things today, and these are not areas that we're going to deal with in one day or a weekend, but we may be able to each of us find a few more pointers that help us to keep a practice going, some reminders, some practices, some techniques, some themes that help us to continually work on these areas of contact, attention and intention.